So welcome back, guys. We'll just start with, have you guys managed to finish everything? Like all the 10 exercises or? How many have finished the first five? Okay, that's very nice. So we'll just go on to discuss the answers. And if you had any questions while you are solving the exercises or while you're discussing it, we can just discuss that. Okay, so did anyone have a problem with the first question? Get all the rows where val A is greater than 5 and val B is less than or equal to 16. Or does anyone have another answer other than this one? No questions? Okay, second one. So is everyone able to read that? Yeah? Okay, so get all the rows where val A is in between 5 and 8. So I think I saw some answers like that. And that's totally fine as well. I just wanted to show that there is a function called between, which takes two arguments and then does exactly the same. And the third one, it's basically the use of a base R function called order. So if you have used the function order, it should be relatively straightforward. So order function takes basically a bunch of variables, and a minus before the variable name would just, you know, do in decreasing order, because if it's an integer or a numeric column, the minus would just make it negative, and ordering that would in effect result in a decreasing order. Is this clear? I saw quite a bit of variations of this answer. Yeah. So there's one difference between set order, because set in data table, any function that starts with set does the operations on the data table by reference, which means it actually modifies the original data table. So when you do, if you do set order DT1 code minus val A, this, after this operation, DT1 itself will be changed, right? Here, in this case, you will have to assign it to an answer, otherwise the result is lost, right? But this is very useful, especially if you have, if your system's requirements, memory requirements are limited, and you'd like to reorder something, like if you have an 8 GB system with a 4 GB data table, then if you do this, it's going to swap, right? So return the last two rows of DT1. So if you know the function end row, then you could have, or you would have done it like that. So end row of DT1 gives the total number of rows, and that minus one will give you the last but one, and you create a sequence, or a vector in this case. But dot n is a special symbol that works in data table, and it's used both in the I and the j argument. So if I were to do DT1.n, it basically holds the index, or it dot n is a length one integer value which holds the total number of rows in the data table. So that's equivalent to n row of DT1 in this case. And so it's returning the last row. And if you want to figure out what the value of it is, you can use the j argument, which is going to evaluate the value contained in dot n, and it's returning the total number of rows. And the next one, return a random sample of four rows. So here I'm using the, I'm going to set a seed for reproducibility. And so dot n contains the total number of rows, right? So sample, in this case, from 1 to 9. So sample 9, 4. Will give you a random sample of four values between 1 and 9. So the 9 basically tells from 1 to 9, give me four values without replacement. So the same value wouldn't occur more than once. So in this case, this is the four values that the function sample returned, and we're just going to use that to subset. And if you hadn't known .n, you would have done something like this. And the next one, get the median of both the columns where code is not A. So this should be pretty straightforward, isn't it? Did anybody have difficulties with this one? So always think of approaching first, is there any rows that we have to select? And within that, if we have any columns to operate on or select. So in this case, it says where is actually a very good indicator. If you're used to SQL, then you'll know that the clause where is used to select the number of rows. So where code is not equals A is the first part here. And this returns all the rows where this condition is satisfied. And then it says, get the median of both these columns. So on those rows, we are going to get the median of both these columns. And then remove all rows in DT2. So there's a small confusion here. When I meant remove all rows, what I meant was to retain the first copy of that duplicated row and remove everything else. And that's what duplicated function in base R does. So if you look at DT2, so the second and the third row are duplicated. And if you just use the function duplicated on the ID column, you'd see false, false, true, false, true. What? Yeah, that's right. So the third one is the first occurrence of the duplicated value 1, so that's true. And then here there's a 3, and that has already occurred, so it would mark that as a duplicate value. And then you can do, sorry. You want the not duplicated, so you just negate it and subset. Is this clear? If you have any questions, just voice in. Okay, so return all unique combinations of ID and code as a two-column data table. And there must be a condition somewhere, yeah, where val A square is greater than val B. So once again, so the condition for selecting the rows is pretty clear. Val A square is greater than val B. And if you just use which equals true, you get the indices where this condition is satisfied. And if you remove that, you just get the entire table. But that's not what we want. On those rows, we want to get unique values or unique combinations of ID and code. So obviously, this would give you just those two values, right? But either you can do that, just do a unique on top of it, or you can pass the unique expression here, but then this won't work because now we are operating on a list. In the previous case, we were operating on a data frame, sorry, data table. This whole expression returned a data table, and there is a method for unique that knows how to operate on data.table, but there isn't one that operates on lists. So we'll have to convert that into a data table. But you can avoid all of this by using a special variable that we have in data table called .sd, which stands for subset of data. And to give you an idea of what that looks like, so if I just do .sd, it would just return exactly the same table as what I gave in. But if I use the argument.sdcalls and then I just provide one column in the data table, then it basically tells that this .sd, which is a subset, should contain only those columns that I provide in the .sdcalls argument. So obviously this would return just one value, sorry, one column. So on top of that, if I now say val A is square is greater than, sorry, val B square was it? Then on those rows that satisfy this condition, it would just return a single column data table. And what we want is to get both ID and code. So I just do that. And this gives me all the values. Now, if I want the unique, then because we can allow, sorry, we can do computations on the J expression, I can do that. More confused, less confused? More? Okay. So .sd is a special symbol that holds a subset of data, and the columns, by default, it holds all the columns. And if you want, you can specify that whatever columns that you want it to hold by using the .sd calls argument, right? And .sd by itself is a data table. So you can do whatever operations that you do on a data table on .sd as well. So unique function can be applied to this part, just like you would apply unique on any other data table. This will get clearer with more examples as well. And so that's the next question, apparently. .sd, and this is a short form to tell, get all the columns from ID to code. So then the last one for every, so this is with two tables. For every DD3 dollar code, return the last matching rows. From DT1 along with ID column from this. Okay, so did anyone manage to get this one right? Or did anyone manage to work this one out? I think this answer is wrong. Did anyone get it right? Okay, so let's go through step by step, right? So for every DT3 dollar code, return the last matching values of val A from DT1. So we have to get the rows where code in DT3 matches DT1. So this gives you the rows. And we have to return the columns call, val A, and ID. And we only have to return the last matching row. But the thing is, there are two ID columns here, one from DT1 and the other one in DT3, right? So how do we distinguish between whether we would like to have the ID from DT1 or DT3? Because this DT3 is in the I argument of data table, we have this prefix which tells we specifically want the column that is from DT3. And if we just did this, it would give you the values from DT1. Now, this is not a problem. So in these two cases, we don't have, well, in this case as well, here we have to use an I dot, because if you want to return the values from I, then you have to use I dot, because the code column is also common between DT1 and DT3. But the question asks specifically that you want to get the ID from DT3. So, okay, I don't have DT3 here. So that would give you this. And of course, you can also name the column here to whatever you want, if you want it to not be named i.id. Okay, so on to the, sorry. Any questions here? Okay, so the next one is to go back to the second part, which is just updating existing data tables. So here the rows are never going to change. You're just going to either update an existing column or you're going to add a new column to the data table. And so one thing what you have to understand is in data table we use this operator which is called the colon equals operator. You can see in the first line. And this updates the data table by reference. You can see that there is no result on the right hand side. That's because it's going to update the result on the existing data table, right? So The first part, DT1 code equals equals C, is the same as what we saw before. It's going to figure out the rows where this condition satisfies, and that's the rows that are marked on the left side. So on those rows, what we are going to do is tell, so the J expression here tells that update val B with the value val B plus 1, just for those rows where this condition is satisfied. So the first form is just bunch of columns on the left-hand side, colon equals bunch of values on the right-hand side. And the second form is a functional equivalent of it, where you can just use the colon equals as a function, like how you'd use a list, for example, and say name equals value, and so on. So I'll just show you how we can do this in, if you have to update more than one column. So this is DT1, and let's say code equals C. Val A, val B. So is it clear what this will do? So we are going to use the same condition. And the left-hand side takes a bunch of character values, and the right-hand side takes a bunch of values in the form of a list. And it would update the existing values of DT1 with the values plus 1, just where those rows were satisfied. So in the previous scenario, what we saw here, this is a very sort of very common case. So when you have just one column, we allow you to not use the double quotes. So in the previous case, what we could do is, instead of writing it this way, we could also have done it this. So when you have just two, well, you can, so it would just, so that L just says that, so if you have an integer column, so let's say you have vector, right? If you look at the class, it says integer, right? Now if I do class of x plus 1, then this 1 is a numeric value in the sense that it takes 8 bytes to store as opposed to an integer value which takes 4 bytes. And R automatically converts the entire x vector to a numeric value first, and then adds that 1 to it. So imagine if you have like a gigabyte of values in a vector, an integer vector, and you're going to add 1 to it. So it will convert the entire 1 gigabyte value in RAM to a 2 gigabyte numeric value, and then add the 1 to it, and then return a completely new 2 gigabyte vector to you. So just to add 1 value to an integer value, you're creating 4 gigabytes of RAM. So because R is quite free with types, it automatically does the conversion for you. So that's why we make it a practice to kind of make sure that you know that it is an integer column and just add that one. So that's all the L does. If you do this, then this is an integer, this is an integer, so the output is very clear that it has to be an integer. Yeah, so in this case, I'm going to show the difference that it's going to update the original data table by showing it on the original data table itself, like this, you know, on the left-hand side. So there's just going to be one value added. So how do you add a new column val C with the values equal to val B squared minus val A squared? It's the same way. You just say val C on the left-hand side, which is a column name that you want to add, and the values go on the right-hand side. Is it clear? Now, this is now slightly more complicated because we are going to do an update on the original table, but not with the conditions from the same table, but using another data table. So here it says, for every row of DF2$ID encode, which is the second data table here, wherever there is a match, we would like to update the val A with val A multiplied by the corresponding mul value. So obviously the first, second, and the fourth and the fifth rows are not matching. So just look at 1C in the second table, and that matches with those four rows, and the corresponding values of val A are 1, 3, 4, and 9. And the corresponding value of mul is 3. So all we have to do is multiply all those four values by 3 and then update it on that original table to return 3, 9, 12, and 27. So again, it's the same way as we have seen before. So the first part, which is DT1, DT2 on ID code, would give you the matching row indices where DT2's ID code matches with DT1. So this is something which we also looked in the last exercise. And the second part is what we saw just now. So on those matching rows, what we have to do is to update val A with val A star mul. And here, there is no mul column that is intersecting between the two columns. So I could have just done val A star mul, and it would work fine. But just to be very specific that the mul column comes from the data table on the inside, you can use i.mul. Does it make sense? No? See a lot of, yes? No, it's a separate argument. There's a comma in between, so every comma separates a different argument. So, sorry, this is the same as, so the first argument is always I, right? And the second argument is always J. But if you name an argument, R understands that that is not the automatic second argument. So you can actually switch these two if you would like. And it understands that this is the second argument because you have named the second one as on. So if I remove this, R has no idea of knowing that this is supposed to be the on argument. And the reason why I include on first and then J is because it's easier to understand that the entire part of the first line goes towards looking at the rows that match. Yeah, any more questions? Okay, so one more question here. Add a new column val one. So basically we are seeing update and add and update and add with single table and two tables. So, wherever there's a match, we have to add a new column called val, which contains the mul column from the second table. So I think this is not so different from what we saw in the last example. So the first line exactly gives the matching rows, and we're getting the mul value from the second table into val. And you can see that automatically the rest of the rows are assigned NAs, because the colon equals operator means that the number of rows in the data table can't change. Right, so it has to fill it with something, and because there's no value, it automatically fills with NA. Yes, so you can, yeah, good question. So, not in the same expression though, you can chain them. So, let's say you want val to be 5 otherwise, right? So you can do val 5, sorry. And then chain it with the call. So the first part here will add val with all the values to be 5, right? And on top of that, you're doing the next one. And you can chain that in that sense. So this would then update the rest of the values where the condition satisfies. Okay, so then it's your turn again. Good luck. one thing, you may have noticed that I keep on typing this reset function here, and this is a function I've also included in one of the files in the materials that I've provided. And if you want, you can use that and copy paste it and just use it. It just basically recreates the original DT1 and DT2 back into the workspace, because you're going to update things by reference. And if you want to stick to the original data table every single time, then you can just type reset. And I believe it's called reset.r. It should be in the files. If you had downloaded it, it should be there. So someone asked if there was a cheat sheet for data table, and there is one. It's not the most up to date, but most of what we are discussing now will be available. So if you just Google search for DataCam cheat sheet data table, and if your internet works, then you should be able to get there. characters for 5 more minutes. Has anyone finished the first 5? Quite impressive. If you're still working on the second part, which is a 6 to 9, I'd just go for 8 and 9 directly. So if you're not already working on it. Has anyone finished all of them? All 9? More or less? 2? First 5? Okay, so we'll just continue with the questions. And for the next 2 exercises, it's enough if you solve any 3, right? Because we're running out of time. So you can choose what 3 you want to solve for the next 2. And we'll discuss these answers and we'll just move on to the next section. So, ID not equals to replace valet and valby with. So did anyone have any difficulties with understanding the first one? So this is the LHS colon equals RHS form, and this is the functional form. Did anyone have difficulty? Okay. So the second one, on those rows where ID equals 2, replace val A with val B, la la la. So the condition is ID equals 2, and I just came to know as well that data table gives you a warning if you just don't wrap this with integer, because this part gives you a numeric type, and this one gives you an integer type. So if you want them to be of the same type, then you don't have to do this. If you don't, then it'll just give you a warning message that it has done that for you. And create a new column called temp. So it's fairly straightforward. And the class of the temp is logical type, because when you just do NA in R, it's of type logical. And if you want to particularly create an integer value, then you have to do NA underscore integer underscore. And if you have to create a numeric type, then you have to do NA underscore real. So this would be numeric, integer, character. Sorry. Logical. I don't think logical exists, because it's kind of understood. Okay, so to delete a column, you have to just type, assign it to null. And you can also do that for multiple columns. So for example, if you want to just remove all the last three columns, you can just say, I'm going to be lazy and just use the indices. And this end bracket is to just immediately return the result, because if I don't do it, it'll return the result invisibly. So if you want to immediately look at the result, then you can just use this. Yeah, so. You mean here, like that? Sorry. Exactly, that's right. So it's the same as doing this, because this always returns a result as well. So now it gives an error because the columns don't exist anymore. Sixth one, create a new column called rank which takes value 1. Okay, so the first obvious way is to just chain these expressions. So check for code equals A, and then rank is 1, then code equals B, rank is 2, and C, rank is 3, right? The other one is to use a neat little trick, because here, the way we have to order it is in the increasing order. So A, B, and C are the first three letters of the alphabet, and the numbers that you have to assign to it are also in the increasing order. So you can create a factor. If you're not familiar with factor, you'll have to get familiar with factor. And then is a neat little trick to get the internal. Factor is basically an integer value internally, but it assigns those unique values to a what's called a level or a label. So you'll have to just learn it. And so the last one is what I'm going to try and explain here. So this is something that you'll come across quite a few times without actually realizing that this could solve the problem. So here the task is that you have multiple values for which you have to replace them with multiple values, right? So what you can do is to create a table that gives all the combinations, right? These are the keys, and for these you have to replace them with that values. And then you can do exactly what we have been doing in this exercise, which is to use that table as a subset operation. So here what we're saying is find all the rows where temp DT's keys column is matching with DT1's code column. And on those, create a column called rank that's equals to the vals column from temp DT. So instead of doing this multiple times, you can just create one data table and then do an update operation in one go. Yep. Then you'll have to do i.i.vals. Or just i.vals, because there's no common column between the two. Yeah, I've never tried it, and I'm thinking it would work, but we can try it. this work. And seventh one, okay, we are going to create DT3 and then update both Valet and Valb with, okay, you'll have to multiply the mul column. So this is something, it takes concepts from quite a few things that we have looked at so far. So the first part is obvious, so you just are looking for the rows that match DT3 to DT1. And the second part is, first of all, we have to update both the columns valet and valb. So here I go for the LHS colon equals RHS form. So the columns that are to be updated are valet and valb. And the right-hand side should be a list, right? So I would do, right, this is what I could do. But imagine if you have like 100 columns, each of which you have to multiply by val. Instead of keeping on doing that, we could use the fact that there's a function called lapply in base R that just takes a list and then loops through each row of the list, sorry, each element of the list, and then apply a function to it. So this is basically the same as this. So what we're doing is to construct a subset of the table containing columns val A and val B. And for each column of that table, which is both the columns, one by one, we are going to multiply that by mul. So basically, you will have to familiarize yourself with some functions from base R or any other package that allows you to loop through columns in a list or a data table. That's because I deleted it. Okay, the next one, add column mul from DT2 to DT1 by reference. So this one, I think, should be pretty straightforward. So find the matching rows and then just get the mul value from DT2 and put it in DT1. Does that make sense? And the last one, replace mul with NA where they both match. So this is going to be the other way around because we need to replace the values of DT2's mul with NA where they both match. So we're going to use DT1's ID code to match it against DT2's ID code. And the mul column of DT2 on those matching rows we get to NA. That's pretty much it. So, I mean, it probably is a bit too much at this point because we're just looking at rows and columns, rows and columns, rows and columns in every single exercise. But the bottom line of it is that for every operation that you're going to perform, you'll have to be, if you are able to identify what are the rows you're operating on, and then on those rows, what are the columns that I want to compute on, then you would be able to leverage data tables, INJ expressions, to get you there as short as possible. It might take time for you to get there, but if you're patient, then you will get there. Okay, so we'll go on to the next group, which is hopefully slightly more interesting because of the group by operations. So get the sum of val A and val B grouped by ID and code. So now we introduce the third operator or the third argument, which is the by argument. So the first part of the first line is basically something what we have seen so far. It's going to compute the sum of val A and sum of val B. But the second line says, do that for every unique combination of ID and code, right? So here I've colored them in, you know, into multiple groups. So if you look at the, for example, the 1C combination, it's 1, 3, 4, and 9. So it would just take that at first, and then 1 plus 3 plus 4 plus 9, that gives you 17, and so on. And you should also notice that the values of the groups in the result are in exactly the same order as they appear in the input. So in the input, you have first 1C, and then 1B, and then 2A, and there's the same order in the output as well. And while creating a list, we haven't really named the list, and that's why it's automatically naming them as V1 and V2. If you want, you can just say whatever names you want to give inside. Okay, so the next one is slightly more, so we are going to introduce the I operation as well inside. So we want to find the rows where ID is greater than or equal to, I think it's ID greater than 2, is it? Oh no, ID greater than or equal to 2, and code is in A and C. So that would be shown on the left-hand side, the 5, 6, and the 8th row matches these rows. So from this point on, when you're looking at the second and third lines, we're going to look only at 5, 6, and 8. And there, we're going to group by ID and code. So there's only one group here, which is 2A. And we are going to loop through the other columns, which is the lapply function from base R. It takes a list as an input, and .sd is a data table, and a data table is also a list. So you're going to loop through each one of these columns, which is val A and val B, and compute the sum on top for each one of them. And this will be run for each group, but in this case, there's only one group to go with, which is 2A. So it stops there and gives you the result, which you should see. And then actually, this output is wrong. Should be well B, because lapply retains the name of the result as well. And now we go on to the two table, which you have seen so far. So this is, you have two tables, and you have to figure out all the rows that ID code in the second table matches with the first table. And on those matching rows, you will have to extract the sum of val A and multiply that by the mul value, but do that for every row that matches with DT1. In our case, there's only one group that matches, making it simple. So the first line identifies that everything else matches to NA, and the third one matches to all these rows. And the second one is going to compute that expression, which is sum val A star mul. And this by equals dot each I is a special symbol in the by argument that tells to run that expression in the J argument, which is sum val A star mul, for every one of those groups, right? So for example, for DT2 3B, it has found that there's no match. So it's going to run sum val A star mul on those no matching rows, which would return NA as well, and so on. And the second one and the third one, when it comes to the third one, it's going to see that sum of val A is 1, 3, 4, and 9, which is 17, and that's going to be multiplied by 3, which is 51, and then it'll go to the fourth one, fifth one, everything. So the advantage of this, especially if you're working with really large data sets, is, so if you didn't have this, this is how we would go about it, right? We would merge the two. What was it? So all dot y equals true. So this would give you all the rows. This is just a normal right join operation. And then on top of it, you would have to now group by ID code, and then do sum val A star mul. So this is, the problem with this is that this expression here, this is going to construct the entire data table first before you're doing the filtering operation. So if the first table was like 8 gigabytes or 5 gigabytes, and the second one is about 1 gigabyte, and when you combine it, usually they explode because each one of them maps to multiple rows in the second table. So you'd end up with another 10 gigabyte table, and then you're going to reduce it to like 50 rows, 100 rows, depending on the number of groups you have. So it's a very costly operation just because this intermediate table is being realized. And that's why having this by equals each I simplifies this, because it's not going to generate any intermediate results. It's going to compute just the row indices with the first line. So you just have a vector at this point. You're not materializing the entire table. And for each of those rows, it's going to evaluate the result directly, and it's just going to loop over each of the groups. So at no point is the entire result materialized. So you wouldn't be needing this syntax, for example, if your data sizes are much smaller than the machine that you're working on. But in some cases, just putting those, even if your machine has a lot of memory, putting those things together just to get an end result, which is very, very small, just takes more time. So your code could just run slow because it's doing something which it doesn't need to do. Okay, so you're free to choose whichever problems you want to solve here, but choose three, that's it, and then we'll just discuss the other answers here.